Now, Crispy, let me ask you, have you ever been scammed?
No, I haven't, thankfully.
Yeah, no, good
but,
for you.
But I've heard of people being scammed.
I know. In fact, I think we've all heard of people being scammed because it seems to be happening so often. In fact, just a few days ago, in the news, there was a lady in her 30s who was left scammed of $330,000. Now, the amount is big, but what's more worrying is the fact that she was adamant about taking the money out even after bank staff and police told her, you're most likely being scammed.
Okay.
She even signed an indemnity with the bank saying, I'll take responsibility for this.
Right. Yeah, you know, I have noticed, I mean, recently I was at a bank and I saw this elderly gentleman trying to withdraw money. And I could see that the teller was being a bit suspicious.
Okay.
You know, and I was thinking to myself, you know, if this guy just wants to withdraw all his money and give it to somebody who is trying to cheat him, who's going to stop?
Why can't he, right? Him. Actually, it is his money, so he
it
has the
is,
right to do whatever he wants with it, right?
Maybe he's genuinely in love with someone.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
But, you know, this being Singapore, we like to take care of our people and
yes.
we go above and beyond. And so now the Singapore government has come up with an idea. It has come up with a proposal to tighten the way Singapore deals with scams. They are going to raise this in Parliament. The Protection from Scams Bill will give police powers to control bank accounts. So if they suspect you're being scammed, they can basically go to the bank and say, stop. Stop everything. No transferring of money, no ATM, no online payment, which means paying out, nothing. Everything stops for your account.
Yes. So there's lots of interest around this. Why this move now, right? How far will it go to reducing scams? And if protecting victims this way, you know, ends up taking away personal responsibility. To discuss this in the studio with us is Mr. Mark Keo, Director at Fortress Law Corporation. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Great to be here.
And Dr. Annabelle Chow, she's a clinical psychologist. She's worked on issues such as financial cybercrime and safety and the psychology of scams. Hi, Annabelle.
Hi, Crispy. Hi, everyone. I'm Annabelle. I'm a clinical psychologist and I have been scammed.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
You've been scammed yourself. Oh, no.
Yes, I have been on a Friday night when I was very thirsty.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Please, tell us now.
We're
all curious, yeah.
Last year, I went to Adelaide and I was introduced to this gin that was so good.
Okay.
I couldn't buy it there because it was out of stock. But because I was talking about it so much, my phone caught on. So I had all the algorithms come up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this advertisement that pop up that says in Singapore, there's this online store that sells it at 30% discount.
Mm.
It was a Friday night. I had a long week. I was very thirsty. It was 11 p.m. They promised me same day delivery. So, and it looked legitimate because it had Google Pay, it had Apple Pay, it had all the correct logos.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And after I put in my credit card details, I had a notification that said something about how my credit card details were added on the new device.
Oh, okay.
So I had to call the banks and terminate my card.
Yeah.
Get the
whole
motion started.
Yeah.
Okay. But at least you got that notice and that made you think, oops, something's wrong, right?
Yeah.
So in your case, you knew something was up.
When I got the notification.
Yes.
But see, I would like to think that I know enough about scams because I talk about it. I work with people who have been scammed and I have some subject knowledge about it.
When people are doing this, what are they thinking?
Okay, so maybe I think we need to look into the psychology of how we make decisions first.
Okay.
So I think there are two different processes, right? There's the cognitive and then there's the motivational. So the cognitive is how we make the decisions, and then the motivational is why we make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So in a very busy world, when we are time poor, we rely on heuristics. So we make system one kind of decisions where they're short and quick.
Okay.
So if you're thirsty, you need gin, buy. If it's a 30% discount, buy. And there's a sense of urgency or there's a scarcity or it feels like it's unique and special to me.
Okay.
Right? So motivation means like a lot of times it's visceral. So it actually preys on our unmet needs or our basic needs.
Okay.
So for me, it was thirst.
Yeah.
And actually in our society, a lot of times it would be related to money or loneliness. Because even though there are a lot of people, we are poorly connected with each other.
So if somebody shows up, tries to meet this need.
Yep.
In your mind, you are thinking this is legitimate.
Absolutely.
You're tempted.
Yeah, but that guy behind there is a scammer. La.
Yes, and I think most importantly, one of the bias that we actually end up subscribing to is confirmation bias. Because as human beings, we like to believe what we think we know. And we choose to believe in things that can confirm our hypothesis instead of refute our hypothesis.
Yeah.
So when we meet someone and that kind of matches the profile and it meets our unmet needs, bam, that's a connection there.
So I was reading about this 80-year-old. She was actually tricked into believing that the police will come after, will tell you, oh, you're being scammed. Don't believe the police. So when they knocked on her door, she basically said, see, this is what the guy told me. It's true.
Yeah.
And that's a different subset of people, right? Tough to deal with, right?
But actually, in our local context, that's very prevalent because we are socialized. There's an appeal to authority. We trust authority. And as a culture, we are actually socialized to be obedient towards authority.
Okay. So also in Singapore, we are more trusting that, you know, police and all that are here to take care of us. So we're quite willing to, you know, give in to them under many circumstances. So the scammers also play on that, right? They know where you're from, which country, what the culture is like.
So the scammers will prey on both our very visceral influences as well as the way that we think about things.
With this bill passing, or this law, if it becomes law, it gives police these powers. Why is it important for them to have such powers?
The key thing is that the police are already taking active steps, right? So I think if you look at the mid-year crimes brief released by the police force, they give some statistics on the amount of people, number of cases that the banks have referred to them, tried to persuade people, look, you're being scammed, it's not a good idea to withdraw your life savings to transfer to this dashing-looking man on the internet. And they haven't succeeded all the time, right? And they are thinking, I need more time to persuade these people, to get family members on board, get social services on board, to persuade these people. And they need an interim, a stopgap measure to buy them some time, which is why this bill is being proposed, a 30-day restriction order to freeze them, don't let them dissipate their assets entirely.
So it's really more of a delay to buy time, as you said.
That is right.
Okay.
But it does sound very restrictive, right? Some people argue, are you taking away my personal responsibility?
We should all be responsible for our money, right?
Yeah.
We should all be responsible for our own actions. And if it were not necessary, the police shouldn't have to intervene in daily life.
No, but the police shouldn't intervene even if it's a bad choice. It's my bad choice.
That's right.
That's what they're saying, right?
Concern is there, and I tend to fall personally on the side of personal responsibility. That it's your money. If your friends, your family, even the police are trying to convince you that, look, it's not legitimate, please don't do it, but you choose to do so, then you can't turn around and say, why didn't the police stop me from being scammed, right? So I think the concern there is real. But I also think if you were to balance it on the other side, a lot of the targets here are elderly folk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though they form the smallest group of scam victims, the sum of money that is being scammed out of them tend to be entire life savings worth
large.
Of money. And once that happens, then society has to pick up the pieces when, you know, suddenly they need social services support,
right?
Things of that nature.
So in this case, you're saying, let us come in a bit earlier to try and circumvent what might happen.
If I had $300,000 in my bank and I just gave it to this scammer and the police didn't have these rules.
At the time, he's not called scammer. He's just called,
I had
dashing
some guy.
Dashing Tony. Yeah, that's what he's called at the time.
Something like that. Yeah, so, but then I'm $300,000 out of pocket, right?
Yeah.
Which means when I'm old, frail, need the hospital, etc., perhaps the state will have to help me out.
So in other words, we're saying, is it because we're afraid that someone else will have to pick up the bill to take care of me later on?
I think that is one aspect, right? Because given the age group of these people, they're vulnerable, they're lonely. What we read in the news tend to be elderly folk losing life savings, need children to support them, and then the caregiver stress becomes very real. And what if we could just prevent all of this?
The consequences can be quite dire. But Annabelle, if I'm older, I'm having a good time talking to this person, I'm enjoying the company, and then I lose $100,000. Maybe I say it's money well spent?
Potentially, because I think what you're referring to is a person's autonomy, right? You are deciding how you want to spend the money mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what you consider to be worthwhile. I always imagine it like a parent and child relationship between the government and us, right? So it's like, I'm telling you, this is not good. This is dangerous, right?
Yeah.
But if you still decide to do it, then you have to suffer the consequences. But if you suffer the consequences, a lot of times parents will try to save their children, right?
Right, right.
So I wonder if a lot of education is going to be very important and vital. But I think this is like a deterrent, right? It's like every time we get scammed, it's because there's an immediacy, there's an urgency. So when the restrictive order kicks in, it's a bit of that pause button.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll pause and cool down and then you think about what you want to do with your money. And I don't know what happens if after 30 days, I still want to give the scammer my money.
Nothing's stopping anyone from, you know, immediately trying to get back into this cycle again. Of course, there are many, you know, different considerations.
But then again, at the same time, you I'm having a good time. The guy says transfer 50,000. I'm more than happy to do so. And then you stop and give me this thing. Then I get stressed by this restriction order.
Because
I get upset. My children are nagging me that I'm doing something wrong.
You are doing something wrong.
You just spoiled my happy relationship with Dashing Tony, you know?
So most of the data is coming from people who are losing their life savings, right? And basically, they're not rich and they suddenly don't have millions of dollars. So it's to protect them from their own bad choices.
Okay, but can it be more harmful than helpful? Not physically, but mentally, emotionally.
We need to rely on the intentions. And I imagine when I looked at the restrictive order, I think it's probably two things. One, it's a bit of an interruptive effect, right? A lot of times we get scammed because there's that urgency. Give me the money now or I'm going to go.
And the ease, right? You can just transfer.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think because there's also recently a lot of information about like pop-ups telling you to read this, don't double click that. I think because there's so much information, do you actually read these messages or you just close the box?
Yeah, after a while you stop reading it, right? Yeah.
Right? Close the box.
Exactly. So we don't actually look at it. But the second thing, I think it's like a deterrent, right? It's with this restrictive order, I imagine the state trying to warn the scammers that we are taking a very proactive effort. So you have to
that's a fair point.
Think again.
Yeah.
But even though scamming is really an evolving, like fast evolving project.
They'll find another way to get around this eventually.
You know, Mark, I agree with you. I think the time is necessary for everybody to calm down and police to give like sort of warning shot or something like that. I agree that helps. Now, but there are downsides. There might be downsides. What safeguards do you think should be in place? You've said in a CNA commentary that you wrote, right, that the speed of decision-making increases, the potential risk of making an inaccurate assessment also increases. So it is possible that the cops make a mistake, let's say, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I took a look at the bill and it appears that currently it's entirely, all the power currently rests within the police force themselves. There is a right to appeal. So if you really want to give your money to Dashing Tony, for example, you could file an appeal to the commissioner, right? And you could put in all the documentation that you can find to say that this guy is real, he's the love of my life and things like that. But the deciding authority is the commissioner of police or whoever he may designate for this purpose, right? And typically, when it comes to police powers, we would prefer a separate body to be that check and balance against the exercise of police powers, right? And typically, that would be the courts, right? Typically, there would be some recourse to go to the judiciary to say, please look at the decision they have made, given that the need for speed is there, and a lot of the times it's dealing with investigations that are still ongoing, right? The scam hasn't actually happened yet.
Yep.
The police, there may be some concern on the ministry's part to say that I don't really want to be forced to disclose my investigations to the judiciary at this point in time.
Right.
So I think there's a balance to be struck. There is an appeals mechanism. I'm not sure in practice how often it would be used or whether it would be an effective check, given that it's the police checking the police's own actions. So there is that concern. But I think there's also a balance that needs to be drawn in that regard.
Yeah, they've come out and say that this is a last resort. You know, the restriction order is not going to be the first thing they pull out of their bag, lah. You know, they're going to, you know, do the due diligence check.
I think it ought to be, right? The more interventionist the law, the stricter the test ought to be. They say that it's one of necessity. It's not really defined what it means that for the restriction order to be necessary. But in my view, I think it should minimally require that they have exhausted all other means before they invoke this.
I feel like it's a necessary evil. Because clearly the data is showing the police that this is a serious problem. The banks have limited ability to actually, you know, have these powers, right?
At the end of the day, is my money, should I not be able to do with it whatever I please, whether it is right or wrong?
So I think as a person, we have a right to make stupid decisions and we have the right to make poor decisions. So if I just think about in the healthcare field, if I'm talking about like dementia care, mental capacity, when family members get together and they argue about, oh, my parent is making a bad decision, you know, this child never looked after him and he's still giving him the fortune, that's his decision. And if we assess that this person has mental capacity to make that decision, we still honour that decision. Even though we can all agree that it's a bad decision, but it's his bad decision.
Yeah.
So quite similar to what you're saying. Right. If I feel like it's worthwhile, you know, dashing Tony is worth 100,000 or 500,000 and I'm happy to give that. As long as we can assess that this person has the mental capacity to make that decision, then maybe we want to consider honouring that.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is, I'm just wondering, you know, the staggering amounts that we're losing to scams every day, something like $2 million. Is there a sweet spot where measures can be, where options might be more measured rather than something which is so like, you cannot take out money from your own account?
Currently, the government's doing quite a lot of things, right? So things like money lock, for example, where you can... Basically, like force yourself to only be able to withdraw that amount of money in person at a bank teller.
That's right.
There are things like, you know, the cooling down period where you need to wait X number of hours before you can effect the transfer. Public education is quite strong. There are all sorts of like jingles that they're putting out to not get scammed. I think one approach that may be useful to consider is what they are doing for phishing scams. So the shared responsibility framework, which I think they've proposed for where banks and telcos, so long as the bank and the telco have fulfilled their obligations to ensure that sort of like phishing links don't reach your phone, right? If you click a link after that, you can't then turn to the telco and say, hey, why was I served this link that, you know, eventually scammed me of money, right? So I think after a while, there has to be we do need to educate our people to say that this is your money. You can make a stupid decision with it if you want, right? But at the end of the day, don't turn back and say, why didn't government protect me from myself?
Singapore would be the first country, you know, to have this if this comes into law. And that to me is quite interesting, right? Do you think it will be effective?
I think it remains to be seen. I think ultimately there are limits even to these provisions. They can extend it 5 times, so about up to 6 months. I guess technically at the end of 6 months they could just issue a new restriction order. I don't see any bar against issuing a second restriction order. But let's say 6 months, right? If the scammer comes back 6 months later and says, now you can give me money, and he says, okay, fine, I'll do it. Right? I think there are still limits. And at the end of the day, I think it remains to be seen whether or not it will be effective. I certainly hope so, given the very interventionist nature of this new measure. But at the same time, you know, if it's not effective, then really, what else can the government do?
It will be effective in the sense that it's making it more difficult for you to transfer the money, and therefore you will have to think of all these other things.
The way I see it, it's a bit like a data collection phase, because scamming is a fast evolving, it's a dynamic kind of project, right?
Yeah.
So scammers learn about this and then they're going to change their tactics.
Yeah.
But from the government's perspective, I think this is one of the ways that they're trying to think about how to protect us. And these are like extreme cases.
Mm.
But I think perhaps we will need to take this time to see, okay, once it takes effect, what are the specifics about it? How efficacious? And if the scammers change tactic, does this still work?
Mm. Any last thoughts about this?
One other area, I mean, we've always been talking about elderly, right? I don't think that that's the only group that's vulnerable. So for the older generation, it tends to be love scams and of that nature. For the younger generation, it tends to be investment scams, right? Put money into this wonderful plan and you'll get X percent returns within how many days. And this group presents a very different kind of challenge, right? The older generations tend to be more willing to take in what government is telling them, right? More deferent to authority, so to speak. Younger generation, the more the police tell you something, the more you think these guys are out to make me not meet my financial goals. I want to buy this wonderful item.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't apply to crypto, this kind of thing, right?
That was exactly the case I mentioned earlier, that lady in her 30s, she was an investment opportunity. She was like, this is too good to pass up.
It's always money or love, lah.
Yeah, so the challenges are different, right? And so for an elderly, if the police comes to them and says, please don't do it, they may eventually listen. Mm. But for the younger generation, I think the measures might have to be a little bit different, right? More education, more social outreach in that sense, right? And ultimately, scammers will evolve, right? Scammers will find new emotions to prey on.
Yep.
And we really do need to keep reworking and relooking these measures to see, are they effective?
Mm.
Do we need more? Do we need to cut back on certain things, for example? And then only time will tell.
Yeah.
I think you brought up a really important point. So the research shows that the people who are more likely to fall to scams usually have some subject knowledge about that matter.
Investments,
right? Yeah. They work in finance, right. They have some knowledge about that. So they're more likely to, again, confirmatory bias.
Because
You think you know. So that's one. That's why there's a lot of younger generation who's more likely to fall to scams.
Mm.
The second thing is, I think part of the education needs to be about us having a deeper understanding of ourselves. So we are all likely to fall to different kinds of scams based on our own unmet needs.
Mm.
So I give you an example. If you grew up in a lower SES family and you've got a lot of basic needs that are not met, and then you have this really good deal. So this is really cheap in a really short period of time, there's scarcity and money is particularly important to you, you're more likely to fall to that. Or when you grow up in an environment where you were not loved, you know, you had abusive or neglectful parents, then you're more likely to fall to love scams because you've been lonely and unloved. So I think part of this education actually requires a bit of psychology in understanding yourselves a bit deeper, because that, when you know that, you're more likely to go, okay, am I actually more susceptible to this kind of scam, and I should take a step back and reevaluate and talk to the people around us, which is oftentimes not a step that we actually take.
But I'll tell you something, Annabelle. Whether you're low or high SES, a good deal on a Singapore Airlines business class flight,
all right,
and we're hook, line and sinker in it, okay?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, that's a wrap from us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, still see if we're taking a break in December?
I know, we're going to be off for the month of December, but fret not, because we've gone through our library and picked out the best of Deep Dive from this year, and we're going to be replaying it for you.
We wish you a good break and hope you spend time, especially the festive season, with your friends and your family.
That's
and
right.
Keep the comments and feedback coming as well. So we'll see you in January 2025.
And of course, a shout out to our team. They are, let me just look at my notes so I don't miss out anyone's name. Okay. They are Junaini Johari, Tiffany Ang, Joanne Chan, Saya Win, and To Yuan Yun. Sound mixing is by Ken Delbridge. We'll see you in 2025.
Bye.